Okay, as long as you're taking a go, well, I'm fine. Okay, welcome everybody. If somebody could close those doors, Jonathan or someone, thank you. Okay, so we have last two presentations for today. Yay. And then a really interesting game show. I encourage everyone to come sit through the game show as well, because it's quite interesting. Last time was the first time we started that, and it was very popular and very interesting. The last time, I think, we had it lunchtime, so this time we made it at the end, so more folks can come and not be in the lunch line or whatever. So I won't give any more plugs for that. I can talk about it later. But right now we are at the next session. And once again, I want to remind you, we are in the open source crypto track. And when you have questions, you'll have questions for question timing for 4 or 5 minutes. And please hold your thoughts and comments, questions until then. And please step up to the microphone here. So we are, as you know, we are recording this. This is not a professional recording, so it's just going to go the way it is on the microphone. So please be clear, so slow, and we'll go with the presentation now. The next presentation is Crypto +++, Past Validations and Future Directions. And we have Jeffrey Bolton. He's a consultant, and he's going to talk about himself and about the product, of course. Thank you, Jeffrey. Welcome.
Okay. Thanks, everyone, for attending. I certainly didn't expect to see this kind of turnout for a little-known C++ library, as I consider it, or call it, even though it's been around for nearly 20 years. And many thanks to ICMC for the invitation to come and speak about one of my favorite projects that I've latched onto since my college days in the 1990s. So today we're going to talk about past validations of Crypto +++, and it's going to be a whirlwind tour. It's an old library, and it's on the historical validation list now, but we learned some things when we intersected C++ and security boundaries to create the module for the FIPS 140 validation. And there were some pain points that we experienced that we just didn't realize how bad they were going to be until users started using it, especially novice users who really don't know C++ all that well. So I think I've got about 20 slides here, and they say 3 minutes a slide. Is that correct? So I'm going to have to talk fast. And I'm talkative to begin with, so don't be afraid to throw a tennis ball or something up here at me to keep me moving along. So four sections. We've got, like I said, about 20 slides. And section one is introduction. So I'm Jeffrey Walton. I'm by trade a security architect. Past roles include mobile security engineer and even a system administrator. I'm currently one of the library maintainers, and we'll get more into the history of the library and who did what next slide. Verticals for me include US DOD, US Federal, and US Financial. C++ class library, C++ class library. So we try and keep most stuff in header files to make it easy to instantiate objects, these crypto objects that you want to use, whether it's a hash, block cipher, stream cipher, or Mac. Originally written by a fellow named Wei Dai. So Wei Dai should certainly receive all the credit for this library. He did the initial design and architecture work, back in June 1995. And that predates most popular crypto libraries you're probably aware of today. As a matter of fact, Crypto +++ was one of the libraries that were targeted when RSA Data Security started doing the copyright and patent infringements. Wei had to take the library version 1.0 down and remove the RSA code because it was infringing on RSA's patents. It's a general purpose crypto library, unlike, say, SSL or Botan, which focuses on TLS. So recently, for example, we added 3Fish, Aria, which is a Korean national block cipher, and Kalina, which is a Ukrainian block cipher. Our governance allows us to add these types of ciphers. OpenSSL wouldn't be able to add it unless it became a TLS cipher suite. They could add area because there are IANA code points for area in TLS, so that would allow them to add area. But a cipher like Kalina, they probably would not be able to allow. So we're basically a Swiss Army knife, and we can put anything in there we want, from interesting research projects to mainstream ciphers like AES. In 2015, the library took a CVE, and I can't remember the fellow's name or the CVE number, but it was a private key disclosure in Rabin Williams' signatures. I believe it was Rabin Williams, where the attacker could send in crafted messages, and after two of them, specially crafted, he could recover the private key used to do the signing, which was a pretty cool attack. And it was an easy enough fix. You know, our blinding value we were using, we just had to square it. You know, believe it or not, that was the simple fix. And but the library went unpatched for a while. And the problem was Wei Dai was basically out of pocket. He was really busy, and he's still busy today. He works for a think tank today. But he gave the library over to the community, effectively. In doing so, or when he did that, he had to pick, you know, five or six people to effectively succeed him. And since I'd been using the library since the 90s, myself, a fellow named Dennis Bider, Zoko Wilcox O'Hearn, O'Hearn, is it? I think it is, Zoko, with the Zcash project and Bitcoin. You know, Zoko's all over the crypto world. Zuko, yeah. I've always mispronounced and misspelled his name. He's had to correct me more than once, but yeah. A few of us basically got the collaborator or maintainer role, but you don't see folks like Zuko or Dennis making too many contributions. Usually I'm the face guy. I'm the guy breaking, and I'm the guy pushing it forward, so... I refer to them as my board of directors. Whenever I want to make a major change, I send an email off to them and wait for some input back if there's going to be any. Wei Dai actually serves and still advises us, but he's just so hard to get a hold of anymore. You know, so we know if we're not breaking things and we're not getting user complaints, we're probably moving in the right direction. And the website URL, obviously. Crypto++, C++03 through C++17. Heavy use of templates, and if you've ever seen this F-bound quantification or static or compile time polymorphism, that's where a C++ class will define its own interface and then inherit from itself, and then later the implementation will come in, way later. And what it does is it creates the compile time polymorphism. So we have these very flat objects that might have 10 or 20 deep in the inheritance chain that effectively flatten out to one object. So the V table's smaller. So when you call this object.encrypt, you don't walk a big V chain. You're right where you want to be, and that helps keep performance up. But it's definitely an acquired taste. I can tell you that firsthand. It probably took me several years just to figure out what was going on with some of this stuff. But this static polymorphism or compile time polymorphism, that's a big sticking point. When you hear people complain how awful the library is, this is what they're talking about, typically what they're talking about. At the user level, typically we get to a point where there's a few simple type defs that clean all these compile time templates and inheritance up. But if your introduction, you start looking through the source code because we lack documentation on a particular subject area, and you start seeing this, you're right to complain. So the first thing I do is I take the question I see that pops up on Stack Overflow or the question asked on the user group. When I see a question about that, that's my feedback loop telling me our documentation sucks and I need to get some documentation together on a particular subject. So one of the reasons you won't see questions asked over and over for Crypto++ is I key in on that first instance and figure if one person has the problem, multiple people have the problem, so let's get it documented. FIPS validations. Okay, so the library's been through three validations. They're Windows-only validations, and they're kind of old, 2002, 2005, and is that 2000? I don't have my glasses on. What is that, 2006? Yeah, it stinks getting old. All the young people in the room, you'll get this way one day. Certificate numbers. And right now, we are on the historical validation list. So effectively, we're no longer a player in FIPS. But I'm going to tell you how that's changing today, because I've got a secret to share with everyone that even others don't know about. And when did that historical validation list, does anyone know? When did we enter that?
Last year.
Last year, 2016? Yeah, yeah. And if you don't mind me asking you a question, how does that work? Agencies are allowed to still use it, but they have to accept the risk. Is that how I parsed it?
You're definitely not allowed to use it for new purchases, and I think there's a sunset time.
Okay. So we got to do something.
It's considered basically garbage at this point.
Yeah, okay. That was kind of my take on it, too.
You and everyone else.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you know, and we don't take it personally, you know. These validations are expensive and time-consuming, so it's not like you can whip one out of your back pocket when you need it. So, let's see. In the past, our past validations, we had a benefactor called Groove Networks. And Groove Networks was Network Productivity and Collaboration, started by the guy who I believe did Lotus Notes for IBM. Otis, was that his name?
Ray Ozzie,
right. They were later purchased by Microsoft, and our testing lab was, can you help me with that?
Hey, this was not set up this
way.
Signacom.
So Signacom.
Just discovered that about a few seconds back. That
yep, so.
Doing the same thing.
Signacom did our validations. And, you know, we were lucky that validations are expensive or inexpensive, depending on what your market cap is and how big your company is. But we're a free software project. When it comes to, like, even buying test equipment, I purchase it out of my own pocket. So I certainly can't afford, you know, $100,000 validation. But I've got a secret to get around that, and I'm going to share it. Okay, the FIPS module. Just like everyone else, we have our NIST approved algorithms, random number generator, block cipher, hash, max, and some public key stuff. One set of defines, we're a Windows only, I should say, that's kind of an important point. Windows only, where our validation doesn't cover any shared objects on Linux and Unix. One set of defines on Windows doing the DLL export thing, and when the artifacts drop out of the process, we actually have crypto++.lib, which is the import library to use on Windows, and you have crypto++.dll, and that provides the validated cryptography. Way makes this available, oh my goodness, alarm already? Way makes that available on the website for download. Then we have the non-FIPS routines, another set of DLLs, and one thing folks tend to not realize is that the DLL only has the FIPS validated algorithm. So to get the hex encoders and everything else you want to use, you've actually got to combine two libraries. And whoop, that shows up here. So here's what a typical application looks like. Where we're doing the whole DLL import thing and bringing in this DLL. And then we've got this other thing providing the other stuff. And if they're mixing and matching runtime libraries, like static linking to the C runtime and dynamic linking to the C runtime here, you can just imagine how awful that is to support. And I've been having to deal with that for years. Let's see. Let's just skip this. This is kind of boring. This is another pain point. Future directions. All right. Let's see. One of the things I'd like to see, rather than exporting these C++ objects, like AES in a particular or FIPS approved mode, is just flatten this thing out so we have like FIPS RNG generate block, FIPS AES GCM, and using it in a NIP update final pattern. Crypto++ actually uses this pattern, but it's not readily apparent. C++ has RIAA pattern, or is it RAII, resource acquisition is initialization. That's basically your NIT, then everything's got an update and a final. It's all there. No more, like I said, no more exporting C++ objects. We'd like to add an engine-like interface, like OpenSSL has an engine. We'd like to add provider strings, like Botan has a provider. You can figure out if you're using Botan, if you're using ASNI hardware, if you're using OpenSSL backing it. Another validation, probably not, too expensive. Here's where the interesting stuff comes in. Okay, so our engine could wrap the Apple Common Crypto or the Linux Mozilla stuff or the Windows CAPI. So that's one way to get at the FIPS validated cryptography that the operating system is providing for us. Now, this is the really cool stuff. Here's the secret. OpenSSL has a FIPS object module, which provides the FIPS validated cryptography. Then they provide on top of that shared DLLs or shared objects or DLLs that use the FIPS object module. What I've managed to do, or what we've been able to do, is Crypto++ now directly uses OpenSSL's FIPS object module with the validated cryptography through the flattened API that we were looking for, and we can effectively provide FIPS validated cryptography using OpenSSL's FIPS object module, which I always thought was pretty cool. So now if you have your favorite C, C++ project, and you don't want to migrate off to another library like Botan or OpenSSL, you can stick with Crypto++ and now rely on OpenSSL for the FIPS validated cryptography, but still use your same Crypto++ code. And I've got all these wrapper classes written. Like, here's an example of what it looks like. When you install OpenSSL, you know, it's going to go into, like, user-level SSL FIPS. So here's what our includes look like. We're not including the regular OpenSSL gear. We're including the FIPS stuff. We're, instead of calling FIPS mode set, we're actually calling FIPS mode module mode set, which is an internal call. Now, these are kind of details we've got to work out with the OpenSSL folks that they won't go changing symbols on us. But these are the risks we take when we start reaching in. But it's always thought it was kind of a very elegant solution. So here's here's an example of sample code I use. You know, and you got to love C++ where we can just use a unique pointer to clean up all these resources that typically you got to call all those free functions on. But this would be the OSSL, OpenSSL AES class we would have. So you would still have a class object to work with. Using, they call it a pimple implementation, or a pointer to an implementation. And that's what this is. Here's our implementation. And we're actually dealing with OpenSSL stuff here that goes back to the FIPS object module that OpenSSL provides. But at the highest levels, the users of the Crypto++ library who are used to doing things in the pipeline, everything just works for them. They don't care. You know, they're no liar. And this is what the init function might look like, taking from like direction equals encryption. That's very much a Crypto++ thing. And here's what one of those compile lines might look like if implementing one of that kind of wrapper around the OpenSSL FIPS object module to get the cryptography. So it's kind of hairy, but you know, it works, and we've got our cryptography. So. Let's see, we are at 4:40. Nitya, I think
I can ask for a couple one questions.
Question, maybe. So, does anyone have any question? Yes, no, maybe? Don't be afraid.
Yeah, you can always
you
catch
can rough you. Me up. I promise you, I'm a big boy. I can take it.
All right, no questions?
No questions?
Awesome.
Okay, so
it was all clear.
Thank you
very much.
And you're free to spread that secret around, because today I talked with Steve Marquess and Tib Hudson and Rich Sauls and ran through what I'd been doing on the sidelines for years. This FIPSLD++ that we're using, that's based on OpenSSL's FIPSLD, and the FIPSLD++ is available on OpenSSL's wiki. I put it up there years ago when I first did this.
And Jeff is going to be available in case you want to talk. To him later.
So thanks again.
All right, thank you.
And sorry for
thank you, Jeff.
Over.
No problem. Kenneth White? Mr. Kenneth White? No? No? Ken? Ken? Awesome. He's just in. You just you were going to miss it by a minute, and I was going to call back Jeff and say, go on. All right. Do we have your thing loaded? Okay. Please do go ahead and load, and because we are running out of time here, you're already out by a minute. I'll let you do this while I...
One second, thanks.
All set, thanks. Sorry about the hiccup there.